As you watch the screen, your heart begins to beat faster. There's a fluttering in the pit of your stomach. Your throat is dry. Your palms damp. Suddenly a chill runs down your spine. You clutch the person next to you. You tell yourself, it's only a movie. It's only a movie. But sooner or later, it's time to go home.
Welcome to Filmstrip and the kickoff to our 2023 Shocktober. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Brian.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jay.
And we are here to talk about The Velocipastor, starring Gregory James Cohen, Alyssa Kempinski, Daniel Steer, Ethan Ward, Aurelio Voltaire, Yang Shicheng, and Jesse Turetz. Written and directed by Brendan Steer, released in 2017 on a $36,000 budget. So we've referenced the film strip off-pod text thread, and once again, it has proven fruitful as this one came up one day and we all jumped on it. Brian, let's start with you. What is your background with this movie?
Funny thing, I had never heard of this movie, and my son was looking for movies that were awful. And this one sounded interesting. And yeah, that was good. Whew. And so we were just like, okay, let's watch it. And then funny thing, I messaged everyone and said, hey, we're watching the lovely Velocipastor. And you're all like, we're going to do that for Shocktober. I'm like, sweet. I had no idea.
Yep.
Amazing. Very organic. And now you're here to share in this podcast with us. All right, Ron, what about you? What's your background with this one?
Oh, I saw this movie pretty much the first week it hit streaming because not sure how I heard about it. Probably some bad movie thread or some Reddit post or something because I'm terminally online. But yeah, I saw it. I saw it in like 2019, 2018, fairly early on, and I have really enjoyed it and been a kind of a booster for it. So when it was brought up in the text thread as a Shocktober possibility oh so long ago, I was like, yes, we got to do that one. And I hope that my faith in this movie, much like my faith in the Velocipastor, will be rewarded.
Jay, what about you?
I guess I was Ron's first disciple of the Velocipastor gospel because he told me about it and I went and found it. I think it was on Prime or something at the time, but I went and watched it and I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. And I had seen it before. So when you brought it up, Lens, and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, we read that. And Brian chimed in. I was like, well, this is like, you know, fate or something. Like we have to do it now. And I know, Ron, it's been on the ever recurring, the list that we have running of stuff we should do. And as usually our average, about 5 years after we put something on the list, we get around to doing it. So it only took Brian like 10 years for me to do Back to the Future finally. So, you know, it comes around a bit. But yeah, I'd seen it before. And, you know, I think right now, particularly this year, because much like we did last year, we're kind of doing a grab bag of stuff for Shocktober, and anything we can do to support Tubi, I think we just need to do right now. Like if you've not followed the Tubi's Threads account, y'all, I mean, that's how you use social media. Like whatever intern is running that, I hope they double your coffee budget because you are doing fine work out there, Tubi intern. So, yeah, I've seen this before, and I think I knew exactly what it was when I was going in because I looked up the poster and I was like, that's a pretty sweet poster for like a low budget film, only to realize later, like, oh, that's where all the money went. But the line that got me was, he's a man of the claw. And being an old fan of like Jerry Reed country music, I'm like, that sounds like a Jerry Reed song. So yeah, it's been one that I've known about and glad to get it. But I got it, Lindsay, you were actually the one that started the conversation about the Velocipastor. So how did this come across your screen?
This is the first time I ever actually watched it, was for this podcast, and I had seen it, I think you're right, Jay, on Prime is where it first was released. And I really love dinosaurs so much.
Seven Jurassic Park films, and this is the one we go with. But yeah.
And maybe that's part of it, because Jurassic Park, I feel like the Jurassic Park films were always released around my birthday. And so that's the movie I always wanted to see, because it was the only good movie in the theater in the summer. Mm-hmm. And I just end up going to see those. But I worked for Trex at one point, which was always confused with T-Rex. Mm-hmm. And I obsessed over, like, there was T-Rex everything all over my desk, which drove like our sea level nuts, because they hated that we kept getting, you know, someone Googled Trex, like T-Rex pictures comes up. And I thought it was the best thing ever. So when I saw Velocipastor roll across my suggested for you movies, because I guess their Prime algorithm really
because they know you're on this podcast.
I had always kind of put it in the back burner to one day watch, and I suggested it, and then I watched it. So here I am. That's my story. So what a trooper. I think a lot of us had significant others sit through this one with us, but my Brian said, well, this is maybe the weirdest movie you guys have ever done on this podcast. Not the worst. Definitely not the worst, but
oh, no.
100% the weirdest.
I mean, I don't know. That's a deep catalog. For this podcast.
That's what, when he said that, I didn't fully agree with him. I was like, I mean, maybe it could be up there. It could definitely be up there, but we've done some pretty weird stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, not the worst for sure. Surprisingly, better than I thought it would be.
We'll have to send you a copy of After Last Season, Lindsay.
Oh, you don't need it. It's free on YouTube. Yeah. Just go look it up now. Oh,
okay. It's free now.
It's free on YouTube. Yeah. Mm. Been for years. So yeah, you can just watch that. So
that's.
I liked it better when people thought it wasn't real.
Yeah. When you had to send the bootleg DVD.
I had to explain that movie just recently to someone. And I looked it up to show them the paper mache
MRI. What
was it? CAT scan.
Yeah.
Box, and they didn't believe me that it was true. And I showed them, because he's a medical guy. He's like, what in the? Yeah. I'm like, you got to see this thing.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
It is one of those that must be seen if you've heard about it. But yeah.
I don't think I was expecting what I got. We'll get into it, but I don't think I was expecting what Velocipastor is.
Yeah.
But I was pleasantly surprised. I think a lot of critics were in the same boat, because I read a bunch of, you know, reviews of it, and almost every single one was like, it was better than we thought it'd be. So yeah. Set the bar low and pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, as the Gin Blossom saying, don't expect too much, you won't be let down. So.
Exactly. Well, let's, before we give too much away and get into the meat of it, Jay, why don't you take us away on your special plot summary?
Yeah, this is a first-time plot summary gimmick here for Shocktober. You know, I was sitting down to write this, and for some reason, the Randy Travis mega hit Three Wooden Crosses popped into my head. And I don't know why, but I was possessed by the spirit of the Velocipastor to rewrite that song about the plot of this movie. So that's what's going to be the plot summary tonight. So here we go. A Catholic priest and his mentor, a hooker and some ninjas, all wrapped up in a plot for 30 grand or so. Something about an artifact and magic dino powers and eating evil people, cause that's what Jesus wants. Doug went looking for a sign in China, and he came back with so much more. You see, there's a Velocipastor out there taking evil head on. He's in love with a hooker who somehow knows kung fu. It's not what you take when you're a hybrid mutant hero. It's bringing bloody justice where you go. Father Doug lost his parents because Carol's pimp went and killed him. He tore out that pimp's throat right there in the church. And Carol, she found true love while Father Stewart remembered the friends who blew up while he was fighting in the Nam. Some ninjas want to sell cocaine as a recruiting tool to build up an army at their Christian ninja school. But there's a velocipaster out there taking evil head on. Carol only was hooking to put herself through school. See, it's not what you take when you're a hybrid mutant hero. It's bringing bloody justice where you go. And our duo fought so hard against the ninja army. Doug killed the white ninja who was his brother Sam. And Carol, she got injured. Doug got hit with anti-venom, but his hands were still enough dino to kill the evil Wei Chan. So now there's an ex-priest philosopher out there taking the evil head on. His girlfriend and him stop them ninjas selling blow. See, it's not what you take when you're a hybrid mutant hero. It's bringing bloody justice where you go. A Catholic priest and his mentor, a hooker and some ninjas, all wrapped up in 75 minutes or so. And that's about it.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Beautiful.
that deserves a rousing. Man, Jay.
So yeah, I think we should get into the movie now at this point.
I think you need to do this for every Shocktober movie.
I don't think that's Travis possible. I don't think there are enough for what we're covering Jay, the rest of the time.
Jay, between the two of us, we could write a pop punk song for about Canadian werewolves.
Yeah, we could. We probably could. So just to tease future shows. But, thanks for indulging me on that. Like I say, when I wrote it all down, I don't know why that Randy Travis song came to me, but here we are. So.
Oh, I've really tried to bring something different and something new to every plot summary I do. I've tried to stretch the boundaries of what's considered a plot summary. And yet there was no way I was ever going to do a musical version. And so I tip my invisible hat to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
The guitar and everything. Really? Yeah.
I mean,
just taking it to the next level.
I have to ask Brian, not to out you here, but you're the resident Catholic of Filmstrip. And I don't understand how this guy's a priest, but they call him a pastor, because a pastor is very much a Protestant thing, right? Like that's I don't get it. Maybe the guys that came up with it said he came up with the idea because he texted somebody Velociraptor, and for whatever reason, his iPhone autocorrected it to Velocipastor. And that's what he came up with. But how he mixed it with the Catholic myth, I'm yet to understand.
Well, I mean, the whole thing was, if that was meant to be a Catholic priest, they screwed up hard on that one, because it's not the Catholics who don't believe in dinosaurs. That's a stronger side of the Christian faith that believes that. We'll just go with that. I'm not sure what they were doing.
Yeah, it's a lot of mixed religious.
It's better than Velocifather or Velocipriest. I mean,
fair. Yeah, fair.
I mean, Troll 2 didn't have any trolls in it.
Also an excellent point. And yes, 200 for Lindsay on that one.
I think we can suspend our disbelief for a papier-mâché dinosaur.
But here's the thing, Jay. I think they're deliberately trying to scramble up all of their religions, because at one point Holly pointed this out to me, and I've never seen it, and I've watched this movie like entirely too many times. At one point, the philosopher is exiting a Church of Christ.
Yes, I saw that.
So it's like they're really just muddling up everything. I mean, I'm surprised there wasn't, I don't know anything about Lutherans, but you know,
they shot part of it in a Methodist church, so in Pennsylvania. That makes sense. So yeah, there's all kinds of just mixing stuff. And that's also an insult to paper mache with what that dinosaur was, because it looked a whole lot more like the front end of the back end of the horse costume in the Top Secret than it did a dinosaur at different times.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, this is wow. Where to even start?
I was about 20 minutes into this movie before I realized that I'm pretty sure the goal was to be Monty Python-esque. So yeah. I'd started watching it and I was like, okay, cool. It's just another bad movie. This will be fun. And then I had to like rework my whole thought process around it. And I was like, all right, so they want to be Monty Python, I think, but they weren't deliberate enough for me to know that right away.
Right. I didn't think about Monty Python. I'm actually not a huge Monty Python fan. I've actually only seen one of the movies once, and I've just seen clips. I'm aware of it, but it's not something I thought of. But now that you say that, I get it. Because, I mean, it just hooked me immediately with the death of the parents and the fact that it's insert fire effect. And
yeah. Like,
and that's when you're leaning into the gimmick at that point. Like, I'm down. Like, I have was yeah. like, oh, this is the Doink the Clown of horror action comedy. It's just, we're just going to be right. that for a little while.
And I actually watched the first 20 minutes of the movie twice, because I had watched the first 20 minutes and went to my Brian and was like, I don't think you're going to want to see this. And he was like, well, what's it about? And I gave him the plot summary and he goes, I'm down. I was like, okay.
We've broken Brian. I love it.
We've broken Brian.
That's how it went in my house too.
Yeah. So I went back. But at that point I was like, Is this what I think it is? Is this what it's going for? So I did get to rewatch the first 20 minutes in that mindset. And it was giving me a lot of Holy Grail vibes.
I could definitely see a lot of Holy Grail vibes in this. It definitely has that kind of, we don't really have the budget, but we have some funny ideas sort of spirit. But they somehow had even less budget than a BBC comedy show in the 70s.
I just want to know which friend had the karate school that they just decided to incorporate that into. Because that's the left turn in this story. It's not the priest turning into a mythical dinosaur. No, I'm there. It's the ninjas that I don't know how that. And the ninja plot of we'll get people hooked on smack so that we can get them into our rehab church and turn them into more ninjas. That to me was a special kind of Cobra villainism. And I mean, Cobra from the G.I. Joe world that I hadn't seen since that cartoon was around.
Well, you know, Jay, crab is the disease, but the Velocipaster is the real cure.
If we could get him and the Cobra Commander in a film together, see what we'll do is we'll get the children hooked on cocaine, then we'll give them Jesus, and then we'll be our ninja army. So that's how it goes.
That's a great idea, Cobra Commander. You got any kind of pizza scissors around here?
None at all.
Who is this for? Get him away from me.
Well, I think we know what our first table reading is going to be.
Wow. Yeah. Yet another thing. I don't know. We've done 13 years and 300 episodes. And we hadn't done one of those yet. But I had seen the trailer, because after Ron told me about this, that's the first thing I watched. And I was like, oh, yeah, this looks deliciously horrible. And I thought it was a joke in the trailer, the whole insert fire effect. The fact that they're like, no, we really don't have the money for that at all. So we'll just make the joke then. I loved that, because I didn't. It took me a minute. It took me more than one watching to figure out that. Is it Frankie or Freddie Mermaid? Whichever one it is, the pimp.
Frankie.
Frankie Mermaid.
Frankie Mermaid was the reason the priest's parents got killed. that was like, wow, we are tying the loose threads together now.
You killed my pimp?
Oh, no, yes. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it's the characters in this are something. And It's probably a good time to talk about. We'll get to the Velocipaster, but it is a good time to talk about Carol, the hooker with the heart of gold, who's a pre-law student. That's the only reason she's hooking, as we talked about.
Is that going to be your next song parody, Jay? Just
hooker with a heart of gold.
No. No, I think you just. Go. I think you just wrote that
she's
one.
She's getting clawed.
No, I got to tell you, like, I thought, okay, this is gonna be low budget, cheesy. They're gonna go and the fact that, like, it's like the most chaste, sweet love scenes that they can put together. I was like, this is. I mean, it's kind of wholesome in a way, you know. I mean, it's kind of it's cute. And this poor woman, I don't know who she is. She's been in some stuff, so good for her for getting to work, but. She looked like the only person that had maybe remotely taken an acting class at some point in her life, because she had line delivery that somewhat made sense.
Yeah. I watching this, even, you know, my friends heard me talk about all this, and he's gone to plenty of plays and stuff like that. And I was watching it and said, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but this acting is not bad. Like, it really is not bad. And she, Carol especially, had some really great delivery. And everyone else looked like they had done stage acting previously, because everything they did was really good for stage. But that doesn't translate all that well to film. You could tell that they had something for the most part. Like,
yeah,
Carol for sure. Doug, the pastor.
Yeah, that guy was, clearly had done stage stuff in the over-emoting factor. Yeah. And I think that's how he got cast. It's like
very melodramatic.
Very big work. And kind of a Jim Carrey on Mad TV type way. You know, he sort of had that going on, that type of energy. And
Jim Carrey was on In Living Color. Stop your
In Living Color. You're right. I jacked that up. Well, whatever. Nobody cares. Nobody remembers any of those shows, because the worst one is the one that's still alive.
Don't post about it on Threads or whatever you people do now.
It doesn't matter anymore. But no, I'm with you. It was fun to watch how big they all could get and go and do. And Brian, I thought about, you know, you and me and all the mounds of Buffy that we reviewed back in the day, when they're laying in bed together and they're just kind of cuddling, and then they both jump out of bed in their underwear and go into like full kung fu, you know, just out of nowhere. It's like, you know, that was the joke on Buffy's, you became a vampire and a ninja at the same time somehow, and that's just sort of like inherited power. And I got a kick out of that. I was like, because you see, like, Doug is sort of like, I'm a priest, I can't be in love, you know, whatever. And like, I think he falls in love with her when she starts doing roundhouse kicks, which, as anyone should, you know.
I that was the part of the movie where we all stopped and went, wait, what the hell did I just see?
Yeah.
How did this happen? Ninjas come in, like trained ninjas come in, and a priest and a hooker kick the crap out of them. Yes. Like, I don't get it. It's when like did that you learn this?
It's like that missing in action sequel that we didn't know we needed.
Well, we found it. 100%.
I can go with the pastor gets the ninja skills from the Velocirap thing, whatever, right?
Right.
But where the hell does she get the ninja skills? And why isn't she kick the crap out of Frankie Mermaid all this time? If maybe she knew this.
Maybe it's sexually transmittable.
Oh, you know what? You Lindsay, go. I did not think about that, but that's
STN, y'all. STN.
And here I was thinking she just went to Dolomite School for Kung Fu Bitches or whatever.
Oh, she would have hung with Dolomite. Dolomite would have whooped Freddie Mermaid's ass, man, no doubt. But oh, that's a great point. I had not thought about that. But what, you know, the way they took up though is he's, well, we should talk about it. He finds like a, I don't know, fake shark tooth or something in China because he's trying to find himself after his parents die, and
it's an actual like. Replica Velociraptor claw. You can buy those at gift shops.
It's like the thing that Sam Neill used to scare out of the kid out of that scare the shit out of that kid in Jurassic Park, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. So he cuts himself with it, and because it's got dino DNA, I guess, that infuses with him and his holy water, his holiness, and holy velociraptor. Here we are.
Yeah. I mean
he was bitten by he clawed himself on a radioactive velociraptor toy, and that's, you know, then he becomes the Velocipaster and he gains all the powers of paper mache.
That the transformation when he first goes to, like, there's that thug that's trying to attack her in the woods. So, like, she's about to become a 48 hours mystery episode, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he shows up. And what I love is that obviously the costume is set where your arms are working the mouth, because he just grabs the fake arm that the guy has and pulls it out, and you see the hand come out of the mouth with it. And I was like, well, that is a one take Charlie. And I love that, though, because it was just like, one thing I'll say, like, for a cheap movie, the practical effects and all the Cairo red dye, I was like, oh, this takes me back to like those cheapy Friday the 13th and early Nightmare on Elm Street movies where they didn't have money, but they had a lot of syrup and the blood looked so good. And I was like, oh, take that CGI.
Oh, man. Yeah. I also really love the mannequin heads that they used.
We'll talk about Wei Chan, but yes.
Just to hold it up at the end, an obvious mannequin head, and you're like, oh, but you could have done something.
Even before that, in the park, when he kills the dude that tries to, I don't know, kill Carol or make her a 48-hour special, you see a mannequin head roll behind Carol when she's laying on the ground. And I think that was when I was like, oh, I know what kind of movie I'm in for. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. It's as if it wasn't obvious at that point. Yeah. But that just nailed it home.
I was like, I get it now. All right. All right.
the best scenes for the blood were the flashbacks to Vietnam. Father Stewart's favorite people just blowing up and disappearing. Okay.
The first guy makes sense. I got through Nam without a single scratch. I'm going to go back and win the lot or whatever. And he shot right there, because that's exactly what happens, right? Of course.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's the woman who runs up to him and steps on the grenade or whatever, and just, you know, spinal tap spontaneous combusts in front of him. Then I was like,
blood goes all over him.
I mean, this guy had no choice. You had to become a priest at that point. There was nothing left.
That might have been my favorite.
I love the fact that the flashbacks, he's this old man. He didn't even try to make him look young. He's just an old dude in funny outfits. It's so good.
In your Salvation Army or Army Surplus Store, you know, fatigues. But I love, like, that his flashbacks have absolutely nothing to do with the rest of this movie, except that's how he became a priest. We needed to tell that, but we spent 8 minutes to do it. I was like, wow, what a non sequitur, but okay.
They had to fill some time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
He and Brian make the same reference at the same time. Yeah. They 100% were like, we can't
sell people a 60-minute.
We can't sell people a 63-minute movie. We got to get it. What can we fill this out with?
The pad, this bad boy.
A slow motion shot of Arlene or whatever her name was exploding. Headline.
Yeah,
all this extra blood. What do we?
For $36,000 movie, that explosion and blood spray and the cut, smash cut, it was really good. I was like, man, somebody knows how to work a cut machine to make that work. Like that's not easily done. I was impressed. I was like, okay, Brandon Steer, good for you. So,
so I think that this. All right, so I've watched a lot of independent movies, and this is not my first movie in which the Catholic Church sponsors a ninja academy.
Okay. You tell the others.
So one of them is a movie called Sinners and Saints. It was made in 2004 or so by a bunch of Canadians who had cut their teeth doing stunt work in the movie industry up there, and they were like, we can make our own movie, we know martial arts, and we got all these prop weapons laying around. So they made a movie about the Vatican has a special, like, martial arts academy where they teach people how to fight demons with the power of, you know,
Kung Fu.
Miami wow. Connection level Kung Fu scenes. So, you know, this is not a foreign concept to me. The Vatican clearly is doing this in real life. And that's why.
Okay. So wait a minute though. I have a counter to that. See, I don't think the Ninja Academy is Catholic. I think they're like the Baptists trying to run the Catholics out of town. So I think that's what this is.
I think you're onto something there, because wasn't the whole purpose of the getting everyone hooked on drugs and then off of drugs was to get them to join some sort of mega church?
Yeah, they were trying to bring them in to build a bigger ninja army. Like that was the whole thing. So I'm like, yes, it's like Joel Osteen or the Gemstones are doing this, like, clearly. And when you say Canadian, you know, stunt work, I'm like, you're talking about like Mara Vista. You're talking about the Lifetime Movie Network, right? Like that's Canadian movies right there.
No, I'm talking like people who were second and third. They were some of the other drivers in Death Race, the Jason Statham Death Race.
Yes. Okay. Fair.
Some of the other drivers.
Shout out to Melantha Blackthorne if you're still around and listening to this. She was always very nice to me.
All right. So,
my Brian original and Lindsay, website. So, you know,
Brian and Lindsay, what are your votes? Are the ninjas an offshoot of the Vatican, or are they the Protestant evil adversaries?
Well, first and foremost, so I'm not going to call Protestants evil.
Well, the ninjas were. That's what I meant. Not the evil Protestants, the evil ninjas. Sorry. Didn't mean to say that.
Anything lumped in with Joel Osteen is probably evil.
I mean, so, yeah.
I would assume a lot of Protestants.
Look, man, I took a Dove award-winning song and bastardized it into this plot. My ticket to hell is punched. It's over.
I would say they're a offshoot of the Christian faith, yes, not the Catholic or the mainstream Protestant religions.
Okay. Linz, what about you?
I like that take. I like that theory. Because, I mean, there aren't really, I don't know, the Vatican's a mega church, really. And, I don't know. See, now I'm thinking about it. I mean, Vatican's got the Swiss Guard, and the Swiss Guard are very highly trained individuals.
So for another $30,000, we could have had two things. We could have had like the Dan Brown novelization of this story, you know, to make that work. We could have had that, and we could have fleshed out more of the other priest Vietnam story, and maybe tied it a little bit closer. We just needed a little bit more cash to make that work.
I think we've all missed the obvious answer here. These guys are just the Moonies.
Ooh, there you go. There you go.
Heaven's Gate. Finally breaking into mainstream with all that money that they spent on buying sports teams or whatever.
Yeah.
Now they're ready to move into mall-based ninjutsu academies.
Well, see, if only they could have had the guys that were behind the Invasion USA attack to be the cocaine suppliers, because that almost fit, like, in just a couple of scenes. Like, some of that stuff would have worked.
Now, here, the thing I thought was weird is they go do the exorcist with this guy that Father Stewart knows, and then they do the whole flashback scenes, right? So I thought he was going to, like, tell the story of how he met this weird guy doing exorcisms, and he didn't.
No.
It's just in the middle of it. I'm like, what's the point of that?
I just wish they'd had enough money in the budget to let the exorcist guy, who is a great dark cabaret singer named Aurelio Voltaire, who I've seen him live. I've got his autograph on CDs from like 2007-ish. He's great. I wish they would have the money to let him record one song about the Velocipaster, and it would have been amazing. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, that's a great segue into the pop punk indie masterpiece that is this soundtrack. Is awesome. I was Googling songs. I was like, I gotta have these. It's gotta make the next run playlist.
Because there is a Velocipaster Spotify playlist.
Thank you, Spotify. Spotify is the Tubi of the music streaming services. It doesn't have any of the features you want, but it has everything. everything you want to hear on it. You can't put an RSS feed in that sucker, but you know what you can do? You can find Velocipastor songs. No, I love the songs because I'm a pop punk like Mark. I love all that music, and the cheesier the better. And I was listening to this going like, man, this is good. This is, you know, me first in the gimme gimmies right here. This is perfect.
You're going to make me start working on the pop punk Velocipastor song now.
Look, if they ever make the sequel, I demand that Ron does that. But
they are making the sequel and or have made the sequel. It's Velocipastor 2 is in the works because this one has been a surprise hit for everyone.
Yeah, yeah. And I can see why, man. This thing has been super popular. Yeah. So. Oh.
And Brendan Steer created the playlist on Spotify.
That's it. Man, you are living the gimmick, brother. I am with it.
That's phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
That is good.
Yeah. That's great.
No, the musical interludes are fun in this movie. So. Yeah.
Favorite quotes from this movie. There's so many good ones. Give me your favorite quote from this movie.
I'll start. It wasn't like an out of context quotable quote, but in context, it made me laugh the hardest was when Doug was in China and the woman who had just been shot with an arrow through the chest falls in front of him and he says, "Are you okay?" Oh no, are you hurt? That's what it was.
Yes.
Oh my god, are you hurt?
That's a good one.
Yeah, I think mine was when he's at the end, he's been shot with the anti-venom arrow, Doug, the Velocipastor, and he says something to the effect of like, "I think my hands are immune," and then they're still the you know, the plastic Walmart dinosaur hands or whatever before he rips the Wei Chian head off the mannequin. So that was my favorite.
I laughed at the one of my very first big legitimate laughs for this movie was Frankie Mermaid in the confessional booth where he says, "I stole candy from this baby, then I threw the baby in the river so it couldn't snitch." Obviously,
yes,
that got me good.
Yeah,
that got us too. That was a good one. And
Brian, did you have your whole clan like watching this? Did everybody?
Everyone was up there watching it. Yep.
That's awesome.
We all watched it together. I got two that really hit me. The first one was when they're sitting there talking and she's trying to convince him that he should use his powers to get rid of evil people. And he says, "Well, you got to come with me." She goes, "Well, I don't know much about God." And he says, "Well, I don't know much about dinosaurs." I thought that was hilarious.
That was a good one.
And then when he finds out, he goes, "You're a hooker?" And she says, "And pre-med law, but people aren't surprised as much by that one."
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was, yeah, putting herself there. That whole thing they have the first night that they're together and they don't actually have sex or whatever, but he thinks he does. And she keeps telling him stuff like, "It was so great. Thank you so much." And he's like, "I can never do that again." She's like, "I don't know. I kind of need you to." And the comedy of that was awesome. I was like, that's when I realized, like, these people have actually acted before. Like, they have some chops. That's funny.
For me, it was that scene too, when I was like, "Oh, she can act," is when he asked her, "Oh, was it your first time too?" Yes. And she goes, "Yeah."
Yeah, that's it was classic.
I feel like this movie is just going to lead us into finally doing Angel.
You're not talking about the TV series, by the way. No, you're talking about the Donna Wilkes hooker
the exploitation movie. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well. Yeah. You know, that one's been on the list for a while too. I've been wanting to do that one. So it's also, I think, on the Tubi and some of its sequels as well. But
everything good is on Tubi.
It really is. Donna Wilkes, who I will forever know as the allegedly hot Jackie from Jaws 2. We'll get around to that. But no, yeah, Carol and Doug have some good back and forth. And I want to get y'all's take on the other thing. I think if they'd had money for that, Sam the White Ninja, who's his long lost brother, we would have gotten like a resolution to that because they wrap it up in about 3 minutes. But I want to know like what y'all made of the fact that he realizes that, then he uses telekinesis to get the katana to kill it.
And then he says, "Well, they're my ancestors too." That was another line that made me laugh.
Right.
Like, but, after you Jedi the sword.
Yeah. I didn't quite wrap my brain around what they were going with there, but
like his parents just ignored him all the time. Is that
or he felt like he was ignored the whole time and they praised him for everything.
Mm-hmm. True.
Well, yeah, that adds
little brother complex.
That adds some weight to how the parents would always say, "You're our only son, Doug. Doug, you're our only son. as our only son, we're very proud of you." And then you get at the end, they go through the whole thing again, and then Sam just sets up in the back of the car.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
That was good. But I love the fact that the brother is the thing that's fallen in with the evil Wei Chan, the leader of the Chinese Christian Ninja Mafia, or whatever we said they are, because that would be something that would be like the B plot on the Angel television show. It would be somebody's brother from the gang, and oh, that I gotta kill him off and all that. So I bought that, and I really liked the Wei Chan character, and props to Lindsay for getting Yang Zhishang's name correct in the opening there, because I would have butchered that. But no, I thought that was great, and the fact that you got to have like a lead bad guy, right? We got to have the head of the Cobra Kai or whatever, you know, we got to take out. And when he goes to kill him with the hands and rips it off, we've talked about the plastic head, the fact that they linger on it, and you're talking about, well, I wish they'd had a better head. They spent all the money on whatever was shooting blood all over Doug, because that went on for a long time.
Can we also talk about the fact that Doug was fighting one dude while Carol was taking down like 20?
Right.
Like, it's in the badass. Same field.
Look, Lindsay, you understand the glass ceiling. You got to work 20 times as hard, and the dudes get all the praise.
I know.
No, but that was funny, is that, again, the person we have no reason to know how she knows how to do this is the best ninja of all of them. You know, it's like her secret power or something.
I'm telling you, Dolomite. It was those Dolomite, Dolomite's Academy for, or Black Dynamite's Academy for Kung Fu prostitution or whatever.
Yeah. I can see it. It would work.
This could easily fit into the Black Dynamite universe.
I kind of feel like there's some influence there. Like, at least Dolomite, like, is definitely feeling heavy over this. Because, you know, this is Shocktober. We're supposed to be doing horror movies. This is clearly, like, not scary in the least bit. And it's not even, like, horror comedy. This is action comedy all the way. The only thing that's scary about it is the fact that it's not worse than it should be.
I mean, you're not wrong. It should be... It could be scarier, but I think this is perfect for Shocktober, because has there been anything more shocking than when Doug holds up his dinosaur hands and says, "The antidote didn't get to my hands," and then he rips the guy's head off?
Yep.
Like, my this favorite movie line. Is nothing but a bunch of surprises in a very good way. At every turn, they find some new way to be, like, weird and funny, or to use the $15 they have in corn syrup.
Yeah.
And that's the best part of, like, that's why I think this is a perfect Shocktober flick, because, like, did you expect the lady to explode into a bucket of blood in Vietnam? No.
And secondly, what you're saying is that for indie budget stuff, which we've done a good bit of, like, there's a scale of this. There's, like, after last season's paper MRI machine, you know, then there's, like, we've got money, but we do something stupid like Carnosaur or Anaconda. And then there's this sort of happily in the middle that sort of works all of it at the same time and has the cheapness of an after last season, but without any of the foolish trappings of those other two movies, and sort of finds its own groove and just stays in it. Like, it's like there's an album that a band, a Canadian rock band I like, and they're really a punk band, but they did like this total 80s pop record. A band called Seaway did this record called Big Vibe back in 2020, like right in the height of the pandemic. I hate that that's when they had to do it, because it sort of came out at the wrong time, but they lean into 39 minutes. If we're basically just going to be a band from like Vice City GTA, and we're just going to do it, and it's totally, they just live the gimmick, and it's perfect.
That's definitely this movie to a T. I think this movie lives its gimmick, and they know. I feel like everyone who walks in on this knew exactly what they were doing, and they were just like, you know what, we're just going to have some fun. We're going to be fully committed to this craziness. We're going to, you know, this is our big swing at something that it's going to be different.
Yeah. And without like digging too deep or thinking too deeply about it, which even Brendan Steer was like, if you're looking for something deep about this movie, you're not going to find it. Like anything you find is your own creation, basically. But there were some really, you know, smart little nuances about like mixing religion and things that whether they meant to do or didn't really kind of fit with the whole movie, whatever they were doing. It definitely wasn't this originally like a, it was like his senior project or something, like a college. Yeah. It started out as
he made a grindhouse trailer for it as a joke, you know, and because the autocorrect had led him down the path. And then somebody told him like that you should actually run with that. And so it took him years to get enough dough up to be able to pull it off. But it's like 3 years of fundraising to do it. But
and then it was like a friend's parents, rich friend is the one that ended up like just giving him the money for it.
Yeah. Bankrolling it, you know?
Yeah.
Do we know if this has made any money for them? I imagine it's got to make something.
Yeah, there was nothing, like, I mean, nothing on Box Office Mojo, like, at all. So, like, no, I have no idea. I have to figure there had to have been something enough because Brendan Steer's still working and he's got it up enough, you know, stuff to finally do the sequel and he's worked on other stuff. So,
there's got to make money,
some residuals
or something.
You would think, but, you know, that's part of why the actors and writers are on strike right now is that there are no residuals in the streaming world.
Yeah,
so, point. I don't know, you know, that's a good question, but.
I would assume that since this is on Tubi or has been on Tubi almost exclusively, no one's made any money off of it.
Yeah. Oh, per Brendan Steer's Instagram, he does have a very cute cat. He has a cat that looks like Puck.
There we go.
Got an orange tabby.
How can we put it in the movie?
I mean,
I don't know. Maybe he just got him.
Yeah, you never know. But no, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Ron, is that everybody knew what they were there for and they were just along for the ride. And like, Lindsay, you've been in productions like this, Brian, you and I in like bands and stuff. Like you know, when like you finally realize everybody's sort of there and they get what they're supposed to do and they just live the gimmick for a minute, or you're like, you're in the right play or whatever. And everybody's doing it. And in a lot of ways, that's kind of this podcast too. It's just, this is what we are and what we do. And it just, when it works, it's just, it's magic. And you can, I think you can tell even in a film, which is an edited thing, there's so many things that go to a final film. You can tell when people are having a good time doing something and creating something. And I feel like there was a script and then there was also like you got a better idea. And then the actors just kind of ran, and especially like the Father Stewart, who has got, that's a relation to Brendan Steer. Is that his dad or older brother or something? Cause I feel like they just kind of let him go.
Just whatever. Like his mentor. Yeah. Right. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. You're right, though, Jay. When I think I had sent you, I might have put it on the offline text chain, but as I was watching it, I was like, this has like college film written all over it, because yes, this is the kind of shit that we would do in college, and we thought it was freaking hilarious. Like every little vignette and bit, I was like, see, I could see myself in something like that, having done something like that. I probably did. Luckily, like, you know, it didn't actually end up anywhere. So there's no proof that happened.
Look, as we've mentioned
some
before,
of it, if you dig deep enough in YouTube, you will find some of it. But
I would just like to remind the listening audience, Lindsay is the only member of this podcast with actual IMDb credits. So.
Yes, but I haven't done anything of note. But they are on there, so it counts. But yeah, it was actually one of the two of the things on the IMDb page was a lot. It was working with a group of people who were very much like this. Like they did these stupid YouTube videos called Perverted Columbo, and they thought it was freaking hilarious. And it was just stupid movies having fun. And I feel like that's exactly what this was.
And again, I don't know if he made any money off of it, but Alyssa Kempinski, Carol, like in her Instagram bio is like Velociraptor Girl and like has a link to the movie. So like 6 years later, she's still like, yeah, that's me. You know, like she's done other things since, you know, but she's like, yeah, fine. You know, which I appreciate. I mean, it's somebody again, who's, you know, my favorite horror movie is Halloween. And I've always appreciated the fact that Jamie Lee Curtis has never, ever like shied away from the fact that that's what made her, you know, and made like got her started and stuff. And she's leaned into it even at the end of her career now, or, you know, the fourth act of her career. And she talks about it. And I've always appreciated somebody that realizes where they come from and they don't shy away from it.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I think that too is one of the things that makes a cult classic is when the actors, like when the cast and crew really lean into it and they're like, yeah, this is what we did. And we had a ton of fun doing it. And it was ridiculous and hilarious. And, you know, we hope you think it's equally as awesome.
And unlike The Room, everybody seems to be in on the joke rather than just merely capitalizing on the joke.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think too, the fact that Brendan Steer is not some, you know, vampire from Europe selling pleather goats to fund his dream, it's also probably helps the process there. But
Greg, I want to be a velocipaster. I want to make monster. My Tommy Wiseau just is Latka Gravas, just full stop at this point. I don't even know why I bother.
I mean, room two is coming down the pipe, that they say. So we'll see.
God,
it's called Big Shark.
Yes,
it's gonna be the best movie we've ever seen.
Yeah, Big Shark. Yeah, they're coming soon to a film strip podcast near you. That was an immediate. Oh yeah, we're down. So,
not to be confused with Baby Shark.
No, not even close. Though that would be a heck of a crossover. I would take that. And I don't even have kids, but I would go for that.
Tommy Wiseau and Baby Shark?
Yes.
Oh, man, you guys.
Yeah.
We've covered so much. It was a short movie. I think this podcast will be about as long as the movie itself. So yeah. I think it might be time for final thoughts, recommendations, and popcorn ratings, folks. Brian, let's start with you.
Oh, boy. Well, I can honestly say I had a good time watching this movie. It wasn't great. It wasn't horrible. It was fun. We'll go with that. So I'm going to give it a medium popcorn. I would watch it again. Why not?
Having watched this movie multiple times now, I will say it stays fun on every watch, because even though you know what's going to happen, it just somehow gets a little bit crazier, or you notice something that's a little bit weirder, like Father Stewart's like little round John Lennon glasses in the Vietnam flashbacks. I'd never really paid attention to him, or the Church of Christ reveal at one point, or just, you know, the fact that China is clearly the scenes shot in China are clearly just in a park in the fall, because there's just all these crunchy leaves they're trying desperately not to step on to ruin the sound for the take. So yeah, I'm gonna go with a large popcorn. I really enjoyed this movie. I have a good time every time I watch it, and I will definitely probably watch it again for future Shocktobers to come, or just whenever, you know, I need a little bit of that, a little bit of the old Velocipaster charm in my life.
All right, Jay.
Look, when it comes to movies like this, it's all about managing expectation going in. And the first time I watched this, I was like, okay, I'm just expecting, you know, bonkers. And I got that in spades. And every time I've watched it since, and then when we brought it up to do this, I was sitting there on my couch watching it, and I realized how much fun I was having with this, you know. And at one point I had stopped taking notes, so I had to back it up a little bit to go like, okay, what am I doing here? And then I realized it really doesn't matter. Like, I kind of got it at this point. And for me, a movie that you can come back to that's fun and continues to have fun and knows what it is, all of it works. And you know, we talked about all of it. I have a blast with this. I'm going to give it a large popcorn too. I really enjoyed Velocipaster. It's just a good time.
I love it. I I liked it way more than I thought I would. I mean, I thought I would like it. It wasn't at all what I was expecting. But once I got myself into the right mindset, which was a, you know, ridiculous low budget college production that was a horror flick version of Monty Python for me, it was really, really funny. I appreciated it. It wasn't as bad as I thought. I'll stick with all the critics. I'm on their side too. I'd give it a solid medium popcorn as well. So I think that's, we're 2-2 here, split halfway. So I would recommend it though. Go out, watch it, have a good time. First October or whenever you need the light of Velocipastor in your life.
I mean, obviously make it a family affair, Brian and Ron apparently do, and you do, Lindsay. So
rated X by select Christian audience. All right, everyone. On that note, you can follow the show's social media at Filmstrip Pod. There you will find announcements about upcoming shows and a link to our Letterbox page, which contains our entire list of reviews. Go to filmstrippodcast.com to link to our distribution site where you can find your podcast platform of choice, Apple, Spotify, Google, etc. Please share the show. And if you can, leave us a positive review. It helps other people find the podcast. For Brian, Ron, and Jay, I'm Lindsay. Thank you for listening to Filmstrip.
Thank you for listening to Filmstrip. You can find more episodes on our website, filmstrippodcast.com. The Filmstrip theme music is produced and performed by Frozen Lake 121. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504, C2, Title 17.